You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today on the Cooligans, we are discussing the U.S. Women's National Team and their recent settlement with USSF. Also, we're going to look at a fun little recap of the MLS Cup playoffs.
That's right. Plus, we talked to Grant Wall about his amazing new podcast about Freddie Adu. It's called American Prodigy, and it's wild and got great stories. Plus, we beg his wife to make us essential. That and more today on the Cooligans!
Hi, this is Ashlyn Harris.
And Allie Krieger. And you are listening to our best friends and favorite comedians,
the Cooligans, bitch.
Yeah, baby!
Yes!
Come on!
Si, vamos, let's go.
Was good.
exciting, you know, just you know, we're on TV another day. I mean, just it's just good news over yeah, and over.
Yeah. I mean, you've lowered the bar significantly, but yes,
you know,
we are.
It's exciting. We're you know, we're even on TV more than Dr. Fauci. You know what
Bruh.
I'm saying? You know, he was not even. He's been banned from television,
which
okay?
lets you know not everything is right with the world when we're on TV more than the head. You know,
we are not delivering the information that is equivalent to the importance of Dr. Fauci.
Yeah, we do not need to be on TV. In fact, yo, we need to get Dr. Fauci on as a guest, my G.
Let's go. Fubo, make it happen.
Yo.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
That's right. I'm Alexis Guerreros.
All right. We are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show on television.
Yay, yay. And it's not just that. Also happens to be the gulliest. I don't know if you knew that. Also the freest.
The freest, okay.
Yeah.
It's incredibly available for the incredibly low price of $3.99.
Yo,
okay.
How much you got in your pocket? It don't matter. I got you. That's what okay. it should say. Like Fubo should have tiers, right? Like you could download the Fubo app if you just want to watch us, and that tier is I got you. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
The I got you tier. Okay, yeah, I get it. You know, it's great because we've been getting messages. Fubo TV went is on the stock market. It went public, and we've been getting tweets from people that are like, "Yo, I bought stock, and I'm trying to figure out how do we get the Cooligans a pay raise." So shout out to specifically Patrick. Patrick Stanton of a Chicago yep. Fire fan, great dude, and tweeting at us directly. And Fubo, he's adding them directly.
Yo,
which
and
is wild.
He was on their call. He was on like their shareholder call, and he was like, "Yo, Cooligans are the reason I bought the stock." Which they must be like, "The what?"
This is a perfect like. We don't know those guys.
Yeah.
Just straight
yeah.
up.
We need to reassess our purchase.
But yes, we have a great show today. Not just about this is not on CNBC. The cooling of CNBC.
Squawk
we
box.
We're super excited. We're going to be joined by Grant Wall, who is obviously an incredible journalist, sports journalist for years, and has been. He just put out an incredible podcast focused around Freddie Adu. It is called American Prodigy. It's great. Make sure you listen to it. It's really, really good. And we get to talk to Grant about it. So let's start today with the news in the MLS Cup playoffs. I mean,
yeah.
there's been a lot going on.
It's been kind of wild.
It's been kind of wild. I mean, the match that was that happened this week on Tuesday, Seattle against FC Dallas, and Seattle wins this game 1-0.
Buddy, put your money on Seattle when it's the MLS playoffs time. Yo, Schmetzer, dude. Schmetzer's like, everybody relax during the regular season. Take it easy, okay? We don't need to win these games. The big thing is when we get to the playoffs, he becomes a different Schmetzer. You know what I mean? He becomes like
yeah.
a pit bull. You know what I mean? Something different.
Pit bull Schmetz.
Yeah.
We all know him. Yeah.
No, I meant a different pit bull.
Look, he's almost already fully bald.
Right?
I mean,
he needs to go full baldy.
Put some shades on,
right?
Okay,
little Euro cut suit, okay.
Okay, make sure the buttons at the top are unbuttoned.
Right,
okay?
He needs to get the Latino chain thing where it's like a square gold thing, but diagonally it says your name. I got one of those. It says Alexis on it. He needs one that says Schmetz or just Dolly.
Okay, both will be accepted, right? it's pretty much, I think, an expected result. Seattle in the playoffs. I'm almost surprised they didn't win the MLS's back tournament as well, because when it comes to single game elimination tournaments, the Seattle Sounders become a completely different team. I mean, they didn't, I was saying that they looked during the regular season that they looked like they were already in playoff form. And then as soon as I said that, they like lose four games in a row.
Yeah, but that's them relaxing before the playoffs. That's the problem.
Correct. Yeah.
Seattle's just a different team in the playoffs. And it's hard to exactly understand why or exactly say why, right? Because on paper, you don't think they're the strongest team in MLS. It's because everyone is really good. Not one person is absolutely incredible. And you say that's the guy to worry about. You can't not worry about anybody. If you put too much on Rui Diaz, Nico gets you. You put too much on Nico, Jordan Morris runs past you. You know,
they have a their center back, Yamar Gomez.
Right.
He's Colombian. And I hadn't. I think he's new to the team. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I had not seen him before.
From your own country, and you don't realize this?
It's my fault, okay?
Yo, Abuela gonna be mad.
Okay. But I thought he was outstanding. This dude, he's a big 6'2", 200 pounds.
He moves like he's 5'10".
No one could get past him. I mean, like, Fafa's pretty fast.
Fafa's
right?
Great.
We know that.
Yeah.
But he was cutting everything out, stopping every single opportunity. Just an incredible pickup. The Sounders always seem to have a good sense of what center backs to pick up. And we just heard he got signed in February, right? Yeah. So they had Kim Keehee when they won MLS Cup last time. Obviously, Chad Marshall
played well. Chad Marshall,
just defensively, they just like they got the right idea.
But he's a center back that reminds me a lot of like James Sands when he played defensive midfielder, or like N'Golo Kanté. He stopped everything.
He was incredible. Yeah. So look, FC Dallas, it was going to be a tough game to win, and Sounders weren't just totally dominant, but they did get the goal.
But it's Sounders in the end.
Shane O'Neill scores the goal on set piece, and that's it. So it was just that one play that kind of just made the difference. But Sounders could have had more, and Jordan Morris is great. They're gonna win again. That's what really how I feel, right?
And Christian, I don't know if you saw this. You probably did. You pay attention to MLS a little bit.
Yeah, it'd be weird if we're doing a soccer show and I was like, nah, I don't really like watch it.
You know what?
Like,
not a fan. I gotta be honest with you. I'm kind of over it. Sporting Kansas City versus Minnesota. What a great game! It didn't happen. It got moved. It got moved to almost now, right? If you're watching this,
that's right. Thursday night football.
That's right. Right. So NFL bounced and MLS was like, we'll take that spot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Good move, right? They're like, all right, we'll just slide right in there. Oh, your man left you? Yeah. Oh, you got going through a tough breakup Thursday?
Wow.
Okay, but look.
I could help you move, you know? Help you set up that new apartment. Let's start with the bedroom.
But no, it's pretty wild. I mean, look, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to, that maybe didn't, weren't aware that the game is, was moved, and they're gonna turn on. I'm like, I'm ready for my Thursday night football.
Got a big plate of nachos,
and only Southern people watch football. Everybody knows that, so that's why I'm talking like that.
Okay. Oh, was that a Southern accent?
Okay, and they're gonna turn it on. They're gonna be like, what's going on here? Yeah, you know, I'm still doing a Southern accent.
Yeah,
okay.
They're like, red card. Hell no, man. Come on. I don't know why we both have terrible Southern accents.
No, but that's good. It's gonna be obviously on a regular TV on big old Fox, and it'll be an opportunity for MLS and the MLS Cup playoffs to be in front of a lot of people that they otherwise would not have been.
And this works, by the way, because we've had friends who don't like soccer who were like, "Yo, I saw one of those games. It was crazy." And we're like, "Yeah, you watched the MLS Cup.
That was the big one."
Yeah, it's not one of those games. They don't do that halftime stuff and that final for all of them. Everybody gets a trophy like that when you win? That's crazy. Confetti. Yeah, that's a lot of confetti.
Must be, quite an investment for to do it for every game of the regular season, but cool.
Soccer's fabulous, dude.
But obviously the reason the game was moved, or the NFL had to move the game, was because everybody got COVID. You got 53 players on a squad, 90% of them are getting COVID. Yeah. The cases are just absolutely
one
insane.
One for all, dude. One of us gets COVID, we all get COVID.
We have talked about it too. Like we had a bunch of friends in the comedy world also get it. Like it's still here and continue to wear masks, or otherwise MLS will go play a game during whenever you had something scheduled.
That's your punishment, NFL. If you can't protect your players, MLS going to step in in front of your fans, dog.
That'll teach you. The game, if you're watching this live on Football Sports Network, you make sure to you can watch the game. And if you have Apple TV, you can do the multi-view and you can watch both of us on the screen at the same time.
So keep the audio on us and watch a little bit of the game. It's not bad.
Okay, pretty dope. The other news in Major League Soccer that I wanted to make sure to get to, Greg Vanney, head coach of Toronto FC, has stepped down. He is no longer going to be coaching the club. He had an incredible run there, winning Supporter Shield.
MLS Cup, and he got a one-way ticket to LA.
That's the rumor, right? After the incredible, like, just accolades at Toronto, all the Canadian championships, CCLs, like great runs in CCL, getting to the CCL final and losing I believe it's Tigres, and the so everybody thinks that, you know, LA Galaxy, they have the coaching vacancy. Vanney could step right in there. He's a former player. That is the rumor. Who knows what his next move is? But he's definitely going to be going from the very cold Toronto to possibly a quite comfy and warm Los Angeles. And let's get into some U.S. Women's National Team news, because it's a news about their their disputes with the U.S. Soccer Federation.
Their gender discrimination lawsuit, which sounds bad, right?
It sounds bad. It's been a rough last year was not great for Carlos Cordero, the former president of USSF. But I think the news here really is that they've reached a settlement in regards to working conditions, which is huge, because the biggest complaints were about just accommodations that they weren't equal to what the men's team was had for them.
Right, regardless of where you stand on the pay dispute, it's fair that the women's team gets at very least equal. It should just be, this is what U.S. soccer does for their players. Not like, well, this is what we do for the men. The ladies, they can play on plastic, you know?
that's kind of the big news, that they won't be forced to play games on turf anymore. At the very least can choose the venue that they want to play in. Charter flights. So all those things. And then it opens up the opportunity for them to appeal the equal pay dispute, which was struck down by a judge. So that conversation has not ended. So
at the very least, this gives them a little bit of leverage for renegotiations when that time comes for the CBA. So
correct. And the U.S. Women's National Team are already looking sharp. They played their first game since March. Yeah. They played against the Netherlands, and they won that game 2-0. It was a rematch of the World Cup final, and it looked like it was just the World Cup continued, right? Yeah. They just looked amazing. Roosevelt was great. And then the goal from Christy Mewis.
Yeah, exactly, who's killing it. By the way, she hadn't scored for the women's national team since, I think, 2014, or she hadn't played for the women's national team. So think about that. The last time she was a part of the national team was before Cooligans existed.
It's unreal.
And now we're on TV.
And she's on TV as well. Yeah, doing great. You know what? I'll be honest. You know, she's doing better than us. I'll be honest. Okay, that was pretty great.
We got a lot more. In fact, don't go anywhere. And I know, look, the game hasn't started yet. We got Grant Wall. Trust me, they say 8:30, but you got time, baby. Grant Wall's coming up right after this. everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We just want to break up with a word from one of our sponsors, us and you.
That's right, Gully Squad. The last, during quarantine, Gully Squad has not only become a dope soccer community, but it's becoming a vital space for my emotional well-being.
Okay? Yes, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have anyone to talk to a lot of the time. And also, I would not know what an apple crisp is.
Okay, yeah, we are. There's so much communication and sharing of food. It's I don't really dwell in that channel too much.
No, you're not allowed to. Your girl can see it on your face that you're looking at food.
She goes through my phone not to look for like texts from other girls. She's like
booty pick sandwich.
Dan, what is this? How dare you betray me like this?
She's messaging me, homewrecker.
Gully Squad is obviously the Cooligans community. Of people that are fans of soccer, fans of comedy, fans of food, fans of pizza. It's an opportunity to help support the content that we put out, help us put out more content that we can deliver to the masses, and also get some exclusive content for yourself. So there's a bunch of really cool things going on in there. We have an amazing Slack channel that may or may not exist. Who knows?
Hey, even though we just talked about it.
Exactly, but you know, it's vague. It's very vague. So you can join at any level. You can join, you can give like $5, $10. You can give more. If you give more, there's more perks involved, like merch and a pin and stickers and different things like that. So it's, if you're a fan of soccer, if you're a fan of comedy, we highly recommend you joining, and it definitely helps the show grow, so we can do a bunch of other fun things, you know, in 2021, when we can finally travel, we can be able to go do live shows and do live events and do a lot of other things like that. So
plus, you get some really exclusive stuff, like when we release the pins, you get a pin for joining.
That's right.
When we release the pop socket, you got a pop socket for joining, stuff like that. So there's a lot of really good exclusive stuff. It's not just being a part of the Slack channel that may or may not exist, but trust me, that's a dope part of it.
Very much so. So go to soccercooligans.com and click on the Join Gully Squad button now.
All right, baby, and we're back on a Cooligans Living Room FC. And look, it's not very often that we interview someone who sort of has the ability to have their finger on the pulse of exactly everything that's happening in the world of soccer right at that moment, you know?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, you know, who has the ability to cancel this show, who has the complete autonomy of who gets to work and not work in American soccer.
I mean, look, rumors abound, okay? But I'm not going to talk about that. Just saying, this person is wildly important. Like, it's something as meaningful as the passing of Diego Maradona. The first thing I thought of is, I want to see this person's writing on it, you know? And also, they could lean over and talk to someone even more wildly important than they are. His wife being a member of the transition team for President-elect Biden with the advisory board. I mean, that's how... What is happening in this house? You know,
lots of important work, and one party is doing more of the important work.
Yeah, buddy, you got a dog, and I ordered Doritos on Amazon. We're not living a similar life to this person, but I'm really excited to finally have him back on because he's also got a great new podcast that I can't wait to talk about a figure in soccer that I'm really interested in. Ladies and gentlemen, unless you're driving, put your hands together for the one, the only. Mr. Celine, Grant Wall, everybody.
Hey, guys, how are you?
We're doing great. Thank you so much for joining us. Yes, you were also the first guest on our television show, so it is exciting to have you back. And obviously, a lot happened in the 1 year since you've been on the show.
Yes,
that is true. A few things have happened. I'm dressed down a little bit compared to the last time. I was wearing a jacket and probably way too formally dressed for the occasion, but not this time.
No, thank you for thinking that we deserve respect. I appreciate that, Grant.
It's so cool.
let's start with you're wearing the Boca Juniors kit. You also wrote an incredible piece on Diego Maradona. Let's I think for us, so for Alexis and I think the you know, and not to age anybody, but obviously we were little babies when Maradona was at the peak of Maradona. What is the influence that he had on you? And then did you ever come across him? Did you work with him? Did you ever, you know, what has your experiences been like with Diego Maradona?
Well, let me just say that I have always been just a huge lover of Maradona. Argentina is my adopted country. I've spent more time in that country than any other one outside the United States over the years. And I didn't see live the 1986 World Cup. My first World Cup was 1990, which Maradona obviously was in, led Argentina to the final, and sort of just fell in love with the idea of him as the player and also what he meant to the Argentine people. And I really pursued Diego Maradona for an interview for a really long time and went to some crazy lengths. I remember in 1999, he was in Cuba on rehab and hanging out with Fidel Castro. And weirdly, it's a crazy story. Bruce Arena was the U.S. men's national team coach at the time and had drawn the Cuba in a World Cup qualifying group. So Bruce Arena went to Cuba to see a game and met Diego Maradona, had a good interaction with him. He shared that experience with me, and Bruce Arena actually wrote a letter to Diego Maradona trying to persuade him to do an interview with me back in 99.
Wow.
Didn't work.
Well, thanks, Bruce. That's a homie right there.
And then in 2001, I went to Maradona's testimonial match in Buenos Aires, which was the most unbelievable environment I've ever been in for a game. It was in the Boca Juniors Stadium, La Bombonera, and just out of control, just the atmosphere for that whole game, but that whole week around it. And then in 2010, I was in South Africa earlier in that World Cup year, and Maradona was visiting, and I pulled his, the Argentine press associate, or the press officer for the Argentina national team, I pulled aside. I was like, "What's your email?" And I sent that guy an interview request for Maradona, and I still have this email that I got back where they were like, "We'll do it for €100,000. They put it in writing, like the official Argentine press or federation press guy. And I remember they wanted €100,000 limpios, which I took to mean like clean. But I felt like this was like basically the mob like contacting me.
Are you sure you talked to the press manager, dude? Was he selling bootleg tickets outside the stadium?
It was incredible. Like, and I actually tracked down the email the other day and posted it on my Instagram. Like, I've never had anyone ask me for money for an interview except Diego Maradona. And he wanted €100,000 limpios for a 30-minute interview, if you could believe it.
The great thing really about it is that there was this some sort of assumption that Grant Wall does not have clean money. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, for some reason, don't do what you did to everyone else. Not for that Pelé interview.
You're involved in some pretty heavy stuff, Grant.
The world of soccer.
I'm imagining suitcases and cash and all this stuff. Needless to say, I didn't get the interview.
Yeah.
You can only get 90, you know? if only you could find 10K more clean.
Now it would be like in Bitcoin, so things are a little different.
Yeah. Silk Road and all that deep web stuff. Let's talk a little bit about a tweet you posted that said, and this is right after that, I believe, the brain surgery, which happened a couple weeks prior to Diego Maradona's passing. You said that you have an obituary written for him and Pelé, and you hope to not have to use it. Why the hell are you writing obituaries for soccer players, bro? And what's the Zlatan one say?
It's interesting. Like, I've sort of struggled with like whether I should have made that public or not. Like, because a member of Pelé's family basically contacted me and said this felt callous to me, and I actually agreed with her because any publication of stature, like the New York Times, probably has like a thousand obituaries ready to go on people who are still alive, because you don't want to be scrambling when someone passes away. You want to be able to commemorate their life with the appropriate perspective and thought. And there are people at the New York Times whose entire job is to get these obituaries ready for people. And so we did that at Sports Illustrated too. And they're they sent out a whole list of figures several years ago to writers, and were like, we need to get these obituaries done. So the two in soccer were Maradona and Pele. And so I look at it as a sign of respect for that figure, that they achieved so much that you want to be ready for when it happens. I just wish it had been 20 or 30 more years before we needed to use it for Maradona. Obviously, yeah. you want people to live full lives. But I put a lot into the obituary that I wrote for Maradona. And, even though I'm sort of half in, half out at Sports Illustrated at this point and doing other projects that I'm really happy about, I'm glad that we were able to get that obituary out there, because I had put many days into it. And so, Maradona, obviously a very complicated character, because he hit such heights as a soccer player, maybe in ways that nobody ever did, and yet had this life of excess that cut short how good, the length of time that he was that good.
Yeah. What do you think about that discourse? Because people do feel it's difficult to talk about him. Like, some people get mad that he is deified, and then some people are like, you don't need to bring up the stuff he did. This is not the right time. But it's kind of, everything is sort of valid to some degree.
Tone is tough, right? Especially on obituaries about people who were this complicated, who brought so much joy to people, but also pain to people as well. And so I just tried to find the right tone when I wrote the obituary. And that's why I'm glad I had a bunch of lead time for it, and I wasn't having to scramble in the moments after he passed away. I do think the whole process of writing obituaries and finding tone is really interesting to me, just from a craft perspective, because I've read a lot of obituaries from Maradona in the past week, and the tone is very different in some of them than others. Like, basically the Washington Post just danced on his grave. Basically, it was a really negative portrayal. And I have no problem including, as I did in my own, some of the really negative things that happened in his life. And I just think you need to find a balance in how you present that. I hope I did.
Very much,
yeah,
so.
Complicated,
yeah.
Guy.
One of my favorite podcasts right now, The American Prodigy, the Freddie Adu story, is really, really awesome. It's so well done. Look, Freddie Adu has been this just very enigmatic figure in American soccer.
Larger than life.
Yeah, mostly people just didn't understand what happened, what caused the downfall. And he's not like a person who was completely gone from the public eye. He was playing at Las Vegas Lights a couple years ago. He's playing in Europe now. But really, it didn't meet the expectation that we all put on him. And that is on all of us.
Oh, I'm sure it was a completely fair expectation to set of a teenager, you're going to save the country's sport. Cool.
One of my favorite things, especially in that first episode, is just you obviously, he's very much a part of the whole story, and you're interviewing him, and he mentioned how he didn't really want to do interviews, and I'm curious about how did the project come together, how did he agree to it, and also how does he feel about talking about his own life, and does he worry about being mocked in some way?
The origin of this it's a long story in a sense. I mean, I've been wanting to do the definitive Freddie Adu story for years, and always thought that would be a great ESPN 30 for 30 on Freddie Adu, the whole saga, and what it said about U.S. soccer culture and our desire to create these, saviors and our own insecurities as soccer fans in the U.S., and ESPN never did it. Turned out they'd asked Freddie and he said no. And you know, I kind of understand why Freddie had turned down media requests in the past. I mean, some of this stuff is, you know, painful for him, and it's his life. And so he politely turned me down when I asked for his participation in this series. And that was in June is when I started doing interviews, asking people to participate. And, you know, that whole idea here is, having covered this story for Sports Illustrated, my first Freddie Adu stories were in 2003, 2004. You know, this is a defining story in American soccer, and I wanted to tell it the right way. And so finally, I just went ahead and did it anyway without Freddie's participation at first. And so I had the support of Blue Wire Podcast. They were like, do this series whether you get Freddie or not. Obviously, I wanted to get Freddie.
Yeah.
And then after about a month and about two dozen interviews, about an hour long each, with everyone around Freddie from DC United, US Soccer, other types, his agents, a couple of people close to Freddie who'd been interviewed by me said to him, Freddie, I think it's worthwhile to participate in this. So he changed his mind, and we ended up having a long interview where I was able to ask him every question I had. And really, this is the first time Freddie Adu has kind of point by point in a granular way looked at what happened in his career. He's done occasional interviews over the years, but not many, and not in this type of detail.
What did anything change about the podcast? Like, as soon as he said, yeah, were you like, oh shit, we can't talk crap now, you know? All right, cut episode 2 to 9. You know?
No, I mean, it, you know, all I was doing was, you know, trying to do as many interviews with quality people who could tell the story the right way. And just, you know, Freddie's participation allows this story to be told in a better, more complete way. And so, yeah, his voice is throughout these 7 episodes. And I did a total fist pump when he agreed to do it, because I had a friend of his had told me, I'll bet you a steak dinner that Freddie never will do an interview for your podcast series. And so I will collect on that. And,
yeah.
And
you should have told me, because I could have gotten you a Freddie Adu interview for $100,000 clean.
Okay. You're right. You gotta really look at all your options. You gotta negotiate, yeah. Grant.
You know, you went around it the other way, but I could have gotten it much easier.
You know, this was the thing that really, really impressed me. And I know that, you know, like Freddie, he had basically heard about, you know, everyone recommended doing the podcast because of, and now we kind of got confirmation like that. They were genuine and honest conversations, and it wasn't looking to make Freddie Adu look bad. And the biggest surprise to me listening to him is I expected something to be like wrong with him, like something like, oh, I made this, I did this, and oh, I was crazy as a kid, or like he sounds like he clearly knows where, like he's okay with where his life is and the decisions that he's made, and he doesn't sound like you would sort of expect the Diego Maradona personality coming from someone who was put, you know, so much pressure on as a child. And it's not that way at all. He's just like,
yeah, it didn't break him.
This is how I am. This is who I am.
Yeah. I mean, one thing is that I think the general public might just assume that Freddie is this sad story, and he's not. You know, if you ask him about that, he's like, no way, man. And if you talk to the people around him, it's very clear they don't view Freddie Adu as a sad story. And I think that comes even clearer as the series progresses. And, you know, there's one new episode coming out every Tuesday. And in some ways, I actually think it's an inspirational story, because Freddie was always a good interview, but he still is. And he's not bitter. And he's like, the thing I'm most proud of in my life is buying my mom a house after emigrating from Ghana, and she worked 2-3 jobs at a time when I was a kid, and she's never had to work since I bought her that house. And you put that in perspective and you're like, oh, wow, this isn't necessarily a sad story. And he's still pursuing playing the sport for the love of the game. I mean, he just signed with a team in Sweden that's in the third division. And obviously he's not coming back to the US men's national team. That's that ship has sailed, but he wants to play, and he you know, didn't want to announce his retirement. He's like, I'm not done playing yet. I still want to do this. And he's about to go now to Sweden and play in a very humble situation, but it makes you feel good for his love of the sport.
Why? Yeah, I guess the question, and I don't know if you ever ask him this, why didn't it work out? And I understand that there's a certain level of expectation, but skill wise, I mean, I still remember that one cross, I believe it was against Panama, where I'm like, my God, like, you know, there's certain things, there's these flashes of brilliance. Maybe he wasn't, you know, the Pele of America, but he certainly is an incredible player who probably deserves to be at the men's national team level, at least for a good chunk of his career. I'm not exactly sure where he is right now, but why didn't it work out? Does he have anything to offer?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to push Freddie to have some self-introspection and get a sense of what, you know, what he could have done better personally. And he did say that he felt like he could have worked harder at certain times in his career. He also said that his biggest single mistake was not staying at Benfica after his first season there, which had gone okay, and fighting for playing time. You know, he wanted to go out on loan, and those loans that he did in Europe brought progressively less playing time and really diminished his stature and hurt his career. And then you had a lot of adults making decisions around Freddie that were not really in his interest. You know, whoever signed off on Freddie being in a TV ad in this national ad campaign with Pele, instantly putting him in a position of American public, this kid is the next Pele, is just what you're saying by doing that, kind of set him up to fail, because he wasn't, whatever he did at that point was going to be seen as underwhelming. And so I think all of that combined on things. And I had players like, you know, teammates like Ernie Stewart from his first DC United team say, Freddie wasn't able to focus on soccer enough. He was doing way too much promotion, being asked to do that for the team, for the league, that he, you know, he just didn't get that much better as a soccer player. But then he would have these summer tournaments with US youth national teams and even the senior national team at that 2011 Gold Cup, where you're like, this kid's got it. Yeah. And then he just couldn't do it at club level on a consistent basis. But that was maybe the most confounding thing.
Yeah, I remember we spoke to Mike McGee, and when you hear players talk about Freddie Adu when they played with him, they were just like, this kid embarrassed all of us. We could not keep up with him. And so it almost doesn't sound real. I'm like, what reality are you living in? But no, he was really that good. And it's like, you interviewed LeBron James, you know, before he was LeBron James. And it made total sense based on what everyone else is saying that he should have been the next LeBron James for soccer.
Yeah,
that's what everyone thought, like respected people. And I do think it's good to listen to the first couple episodes when you hear the legend of Freddie Adu to remind us that this kid really was good. It wasn't some situation where, oh, it's just a bunch of idiots telling us that this kid was good who didn't know what they were talking about, because that promise, that potential really was there. And he was showing it at the under-17 World Cup. He had a hat trick at the under-20 World Cup. I think he's like still the only player ever to have a hat trick at the under-17 and under-20 World Cups. And I, having covered LeBron back in 2002 when he was 17 years old, I felt like this kid, Freddie Adu, was going to be the LeBron James of soccer.
Well, you got one out of two, right? It's pretty good.
This is one of the questions, and this is from Gully Squad. That's our supporters group. This is one of the questions that I think it's just one of these, you know, theories, these conspiracy theories that have followed Freddie Adu forever. MJ Lee asks, I've always assumed Freddie Adu is 5 years older than he claims to be. Did Grant find out Adu's real age?
I mean, that's a great question. And literally every person we interviewed for this podcast, I asked the question, do you think Freddie, when he was 14 years old, was the age that he said he was when he started in MLS? And we do get into this in, I think it's episode 6, in some detail. So I will say that not everyone had the same answer. The majority of the answers were yes, I think he was actually 14. And a lot of the people on DC United said he acted like a 14-year-old. And they said it in kind of a frustrated way. Like they felt like he was pretty immature at times inside that team in the way he acted.
Christian says that about me, by the way. So, and just as frustrated.
I think Alexis is lying about his age, but he's saying he is way much older than he actually is. I believe he is two or three children in a trench coat. You know what I mean? That's what I think Alexis Guerrero's is.
What I would say also is my first Sports Illustrated story in 2003, we hired someone in Ghana who found Freddie's birth certificate that had been filed at a hospital there independently. And it had the date on it that he said he was. Now, that, you know, take that for what you will. I mean, like, it's not ironclad by any means, but we certainly didn't find any evidence to show that he wasn't the age that he said he was.
I feel like this conspiracy theory became more popular because there were like older men, veteran players that were like, I cannot be getting embarrassed by a 14-year-old. He must be. It's like a birther movement type thing. They're like, no, he must be older than he is.
It also
I cannot be getting nutmegged by a child.
It seems so linked to that Dominican kid from the Little League.
Danny Almonte.
Yeah, Danny Almonte. Well, it just seems so linked to that. They're like, well, if that kid was great as a child, that must be the Freddie Adu reason, you know?
Just incredible. I want to also take some time to discuss what's going on, because we got some questions from Gully Squad as well about your wife, Dr. Celine Gounder. Obviously, you know, when we did your podcast, Football with Grant Wall, which you should check out as well. We had a great time on there. During this pandemic, your wife has been definitely for me this beacon of light of like finally some real information.
Facts. Facts.
Yeah. Where it's like, doc, give it to me straight. What do I need to do? And that's who I feel she is, one of the few people that is doing that regularly across media. Right. And now she is moving over from, you know, being a doctor and just a pundit to on the transition team, on the advisory board to handle this pandemic. What is life like? I mean, this is quite the promotion, being a public figure on just like news shows to now being the voice of like for the entire country. What's that like being the husband there, and what input do you offer?
You know, can you get us in the inauguration?
Yeah, what's going on?
I mean, what I would say is this, is that I'm really proud of Celine and everything she's done. She was exclusive CNN for the last several months during the pandemic. Now she's going on all the TV channels, including CNN, as part of the Biden advisory board for COVID-19. I can certainly put in perspective what I do covering sports and realize that's not nearly as important as what she's doing. And so I just try to support her in any way I can. That can be being her hype man on Twitter. That can mean cooking dinner every night and supporting what she's doing, because she's still working in the hospital part-time and dealing with patients and doing her own podcast in addition to all the stuff that she's doing for the president-elect. So I just am amazed at her energy levels over the last 8 months, you know, like, you know, she's a trained infectious disease doctor. She's worked all over sub-Saharan Africa. She volunteered to go to Guinea to do Ebola work in 2015. It's kind of like she's prepared her entire career for this moment this year. And, you know, she never did it thinking she would get noticed publicly. It just happens that, you know, this has happened. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like, what she's doing every day is pretty incredible. And my main job is don't screw it up, make sure she's fed, and be a supportive husband.
Nice. You are crushing it on that regard. Okay, thank you again to Grant Wall for joining us. We absolutely crushed it. Everyone, make sure, obviously, check out American Prodigy. Check out Football with Grant Wall. Read all of Grant's work. It's always an honor to have you on the show. Grant, is there anything in particular you want to mention or plug before we sign off?
No, you guys got it there. I mean, new episodes of American Prodigy, the Freddie Adu story, every Tuesday. There's going to be 7 episodes total. I'm as proud of that as anything I've done in this business. So thanks for giving me the chance to come on. It's always great to talk to you guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Very much appreciate it. Okay, everybody, make sure that you follow us as well at Soccer Cooligans on all social media platforms. Follow at Fubo Sports and subscribe to the Fubo Sports YouTube channel for full episodes of the program. All right, so let us end the show the way we normally do, as is tradition. So for Grant Wall, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we, Grant?
The Cooligans!